Hi, good morning. Good morning, Lakeview Church. I am excited to speak to you today on a parable that I always overlooked in Luke. It's definitely not one of Jesus' greatest hits, but I hope you'll consider it a solid contender by the end of today's message. I know I have a new appreciation for this surprising parable, and I've been thinking about it and ruminating on it all summer long, now that I've had time to explore it in a bit more detail. But as an introduction, I'm going to start by talking about one of my favorite subjects, which is animals. Who here loves animals? Put up your hand. Yes. Animals are fantastic. So I want to talk to you about a particular type of animal, a streetwise animal. Okay, streetwise animals. So our cities, they aren't made for animals. We're not really thinking about them when we build them. Urban environments are built in a human-centered way. Our buildings, our sidewalks, roads, they're meant to support our convenience, right? We consider how neighborhoods create accessibility to grocery stores, schools, small businesses, and emergency services. And as we build cities, the animals in the neighborhood are basically afterthoughts until they become a problem, right? So we don't tend to think of how muskrats are going to get from one side of the highway to the other. I've actually seen a muskrat trying to cross this highway here. And we don't make sure that our patios have ample space for a fox's den underneath. This is an issue in my parents' neighborhood. We don't design garbage bins for easy raccoon access. We don't consider the animal perspective, right? Until these animals become an issue. So here are some of our streetwise animals there. Maybe you can identify them. Yet, these animals have found a way to thrive in cities. They make their homes in the margins of our urban plans. They find those overlooked spaces and they take advantage of it. So this requires creativity, intelligence, and resourcefulness. Sometimes we call folks with these traits streetwise. They have the smarts to see the opportunities within the structure of a system, maybe even bending the structure of a system, that is stacked against them. Is it any wonder that these creatures, crows, pigeons, raccoons, rats, coyotes, they're among the most intelligent in the animal kingdom? And luckily, I have a video showing how streetwise these amazing creatures can be. All right. I think you guys are going to play it, right? Or do I press something?
Crows have become highly skilled at making a living in these new urban environments. In this Japanese city, they have devised a way of eating a food that normally they can't manage. Dropping a nut from a great height onto a hard road does sometimes crack it, but some nuts are particularly tough. So the crows have devised a better way. Drop it among the traffic. The problem now is collecting the bits without getting run over. So some birds have refined their technique. they station themselves beside pedestrian crossings. Wait for the lights to stop the traffic. Then collect your cracked nut in safety.
Cool, huh? So I had a really hard time deciding what video to show you today. If you want an extra video for later, parents, you can take a quick picture of that QR code, another crow video. So yeah, amazing. Those city streets, they're not built for crows. They're built for people. And yet, the crows have found a way to use it to their advantage. So this is an introduction to the story of the crooked manager. And it's found only in the Gospel of Luke in chapter 16. And it's an interesting and controversial tale. This parable, like many others this summer, is not about blindly following the rules. What has made this lesser-known parable controversial is that it's actually a story about being streetwise. So streetwise like the crow. About finding success in the margins rather than finding it within the boundaries of the accepted way of doing things. But as we'll also see, it's a parable about betting it all on grace. This parable is ultimately about grace. So let's get into it. I'm going to read this parable from the Message translation today. Jesus said to his disciples, "There was once a rich man who had a manager. He got reports that the manager had been taking advantage of his position by running up huge personal expenses. So he called him in and said, 'What's this I hear about you? You're fired. And I want a complete audit of your books.' The manager said to himself, 'What am I going to do? I've lost my job as a manager. I'm not strong enough to take a laboring job, and I'm too proud to beg. Ah, I have a plan. Here's what I'll do. Then, when I'm turned out into the street, people will take me into their houses.' Then he went at it. One after another, he called in the people who were in debt to his master. He said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He replied, 100 jugs of olive oil. The manager said, 'Here, take your bill, sit down here. Quick now, write 50. To the next, he said, "And you, what do you owe?" He answered, 100 sacks of wheat. He said, "Take your bill, write 80. Now here's the surprise. The master praised the crooked manager. And why? Because he knew how to look after himself. Streetwise people are smarter in this regard than law-abiding citizens. They are on constant alert, looking for angles, surviving by their wits. I want you to be smart in the same way, but for what is right, using every adversity to stimulate you to creative survival. To concentrate your attention on the bare essentials, so you'll live, really live, and not complacently just get by on good behavior." Now, in some other translations, this paragraph ends with, "I want you to use worldly wealth to gain friends, so that you may be welcomed into eternal dwellings." And the connection here is the life. So you'll live, really live. You'll have eternal life. So that's the connection. And the difference in translations is something that will be, I hope you'll see, unpacked in delving deeper into the context of this parable today. But do you see why this parable is so tricky? It's a funny story, and it's not one that we talk about a lot. But in the chapter previous is the most famous of Jesus' parable, the lost son. And it's, we love it for so many reasons, right? There's the sibling drama, the compelling image of the unconditional love and grace of the father, and the emotional reunion. There's actually whole books devoted to this parable and countless artworks. Not the case with the crooked manager. I don't think there are any books about this parable. And if you've heard me speak before, I normally have, you know, different artwork interpretations of this parable. Well, this is the only one I found. And it's not very compelling, we can be honest. So you get the picture. It's not a really famous or well-loved parable because it is really difficult to understand. It's almost a little embarrassing. The message is confusing. Is the crooked manager being praised for being dishonest? Like, that's kind of what it seems like. Or is he being praised for his cunning self-reliance? Both lessons don't really seem like something Jesus would say. Luckily, scholar Kenneth Bailey, whose book Poet and Peasant is a source for this series, really helps me understand this parable. His contribution to English readers' understanding of Jesus' parables is unique. So he lived as a teacher, and he worked among the rural people in the Middle East, and from their cultural education, he found interpretations of Jesus' parables rooted in the lives of rural farmers, whose lives weren't so far removed from the time of the biblical authors. So from his research and his lived experience, Bailey highlights some overlooked aspects of this parable that reveal it as not so different as the famous story of the lost son. So I'm going to reframe this parable, filling in some of the blanks with Bailey's help. And we're going to get a little bit more of the rich landowner's perspective in this retelling. So I'm setting the scene here. Here's rural Palestine. So you can use your imaginations to rethink this parable from beginning to end. So first off, it's really important to recognize who the rich man is in this tale. He is a landlord, so he owns the farmland and the tenants work it. They pay their rent for the farmland through their agricultural produce. So that makes sense of why their debts were accounted for in olive oil or bushels, right? So these landlords would hire managers to oversee their accounts. And oversee the collection of these accounts from the tenants. And in the story, we know that the manager is crooked. He is accused of helping himself to his master's wealth, and he doesn't even defend himself. Like, he knows that the jig is up. His day is coming. Judgment day is right around the corner. So his silence really reveals his guilt. You know, we can't question the fact that the crooked manager is crooked in this tale. So the rich landlord, he finds out about the dishonest dealings of the manager, and he fires him on the spot. But within the silences of this text, we must recognize that this landlord is astoundingly gracious. He does not have the manager thrown into jail, nor does he demand that the manager pay back everything he owes with penalty, at least not yet. All he asks for is an audit. Though the crooked manager finds himself in a precarious position, he is in a far better place than he actually deserves. Now, this is where the crooked manager's street smarts and self-reliance kicks in. He considers his options. He's not going to beg, and he's not going to become a laborer. You might even imagine he's like thinking over the past years of his life and is saying, oh man, I've really screwed up. How am I going to get out of this? Looking at all the angles, he comes up with a plan, but its success will rely on accomplishing it before the tenants hear that he's been fired. So instead of putting in his time to produce an audit of his books, as he was commanded, the wily manager goes from tenant to tenant as quickly and as stealthily as he can without raising suspicion, and reduces their debt to the landlord. They have no idea that this is the manager's survival plan. From their perspective, the rich landlord is demonstrating extraordinary generosity to them. Following me so far? Okay, now I want you to imagine this village. Think about the people living in the village. As the word spreads, have you heard? The rich guy up on the hill is reducing everyone's debt. He reduced mine by 30, mine by 50. This means I'll finally have enough money to buy that ox I've been saving up for. Top of the line ox. This means I'll be able to visit my relatives by the Sea of Galilee this year. This will change everything for us. What a generous guy. Let's toast our wonderful landlord, for he is a jolly good fellow. And as the village buzzes with excitement, perhaps even with celebration as the sound of music or the smell of good food reaches the top of the hill, the landlord asks his servant, "What's all the celebration about in town? Is someone getting married? Why haven't I heard of it? Go and see what this is all about." The servant heads down to the village and hears of the landlord's great generosity. He sees the smiling people, the laughing children, the farmers toasting his boss. Tenant after tenant approaches a servant, offering their deepest gratitude in the midst of the festivities. Putting two and two together, the servant returns to the mansion on the hill. "Sir, it seems that that crooked manager, that scoundrel you fired, went around to every single tenant of yours and reduced their debts significantly. They all think it was you, and they're toasting your name and celebrating merrily." The landlord's stunned. How can this be? At first, he thinks of all the revenue he's lost, but he's in a bind. He can't go back to the tenants and change the debts to what they were before. His name will be mud. And more than riches, his good name is his most valuable possession, for generosity is a trait highly valued in this culture. He has two choices: return the debts to what they were and be hated, or play along with the manager's plan and enjoy his newfound high regard, not to mention the newfound joy of all the villagers. His servant waits nervously for response. His boss doesn't like to lose money. But then a smile creeps over the rich man's face, and a chuckle escapes his mouth. Soon he's laughing so hard there are tears running down his cheeks. "That rascal!" he bellows as he slaps his knees. The servant isn't sure whether to join in or be worried for his boss's sanity. "Sir," he asks, "go fetch me that rascal manager, for he has made my name famous among the village and the lands beyond. The people love me and him more than ever, and he knows I cannot go back on my word." So, do you think the manager gets his job back? We don't know, but my guess is probably not. But I'm sure he doesn't get sent to debtor's prison, and he earns the praise of his boss, who just fired him. His story would have spread far and wide, and surely, as he planned, he would land on his feet, enjoying his admiration and notoriety, just what a scoundrel like him would have loved. Following this parable, and thank you for letting me do a creative retelling of that parable, but following it, there's another passage. Jesus goes on to make these comments, and you'll see that this might even add to the confusion of this difficult parable. So Jesus went on to make these comments. If you're honest in small things, you'll be honest in big things. If you're a crook in big things, you'll be a crook in small things. If you're a crook in small things, you'll be a crook in big things. If you're not honest in small jobs, who will put you in charge of the store? No worker can serve two bosses. He'll either hate the first and love the second, or adore the first and despise the second. You can't serve both God and the bank. So, as I said, if this parable wasn't confusing enough, Jesus' words following the story muddies the waters even further. The manager, we all agree, was a crook through and through with things both big and small. Well, with the money both big and small. He was dishonest at every point in the story when it came to his master's money. Yet he received praise from the landlord and ends up the rascal hero of the parable. Why does Jesus seem to be contradicting himself here? Full disclaimer, most commentaries, even though it might not be separated in your Bibles, say that there's a break between these two passages, that Jesus probably didn't deliver these two teachings at the same time. But Luke decided to follow this parable with this poem. And I think it can actually help us situate the difficult parable of the crooked manager within Jesus' larger teachings. To explain how the passages connect, I want to start with this question. Is this parable all about money? Check your gut. You feel like this parable, like the deepest meaning of this parable is about money. I would argue that this parable is not just about money. For the rich man is tricked out of his wealth and the penalties he's owed, all because of the manager's dishonesty. It can't just be about the honest and dishonest use of money. For in the last lines, Jesus highlights that a focus on money, the bank, or mammon in the original language, distracts from the true meaning of the parable. This parable is really about the riches of grace and how a small dose of grace can multiply into a fountain of grace. So the whole story started off with the landlord's grace towards his dishonest manager. He was given a little grace. He deserved prison. He deserved shame. He deserved to pay the punishment for his crimes. And the landlord lets him off surprisingly easy. In fact, it's the landlord who pays in the end. And being the streetwise rascal that he is, the manager, he doesn't take all the cash he can grab and skip town before his boss changes his mind. No. Instead, he bets his future on his boss's grace. He was given a little grace, and he ends up extending grace to the whole village. So yes, he was dishonest with his master's money all the way through the story. But he was honest and wise even in dealing with his master's grace. He knew that the real riches was the gracious character of his true master. It's almost as if he changes allegiances in the middle of the story. He was serving money when he was defrauding his boss. Instead of running off with the stolen wealth, he changes course and demonstrates complete faith in his master's grace. Back to the text. Jesus went on to make these comments. If you're honest in small things, you'll be honest in big things. If you're a crook in small things, you'll be a crook in big things. If you're not honest in small jobs, who will put you in charge of the store? No worker can serve two bosses. He'll either hate the first and love the second, or adore the first and despise the second. You can't serve both God and the bank. When the Pharisees, a money-obsessed bunch, heard him say these things, they rolled their eyes, dismissing him as hopelessly out of touch. You see, the Pharisees leave this parable confused and disgruntled because they thought it was all about money. They thought the story was about a man who stole and got away with it. They thought it was about a buffoon of a landlord who didn't enforce the rules of the game and would rather have his name be praised and his village receive grace than make sure that justice was done. Their love of the bank prevents them, and perhaps us, from seeing the joyful meaning of the parable. The parable of the crooked manager and the parable of the lost son have more in common than we think. You can see the two artworks juxtaposed there. Both son and managers are recipients of grace undeserved. Both, and in a party. I mean, I imagine there's a party in the village that's not actually in the text. So take that with a grain of salt. And both the rich landlord and the father lose a great deal of their wealth. They pay the price for the dishonest actions of the son and the landlord. And both stories end unresolved. What happens to the sons? What happens to the manager? We don't actually know. And Jesus, like the great storyteller he is, leaves it open for us to see ourselves in the story. So do we roll our eyes at the characters in this tale, or do we just ignore it altogether? Or do we ruminate on the difficult parts? Do we let them work their way into our bones? Do we allow our imaginations to work against the grain? So as I was ruminating on this parable this summer, I landed on two things that kept me thinking. The first, I, like the landlord, marvel at the creativity of the manager. He uses adversity to his creative advantage. You can't help but kind of admire him, right? He, though dishonest, wins me over. He's like the streetwise crow, finding innovative opportunities within the margins of the way things are. How often do we pay enough attention to the gaps of what is in our broken and unjust world to create something that can grow within those gaps, eventually maybe even taking it down from the inside? This brings me to the second thought the crooked manager leaves me with. He bets big on the grace of his boss. Seeing that his boss is, in fact, a gracious and generous man, he wagers on his character. He wagers that the landlord is generous enough that he won't claw back the reductions to the tenants. Yes, he was a crook, dishonest with money through and through. He's definitely not getting his job back and will probably have a hard time finding a managerial position in the future. But the crooked manager went all in. He risked it all on his master's grace and generosity. And in doing so, he multiplies the grace to benefit his whole community. So, are we all in on grace? Or are we blinded by the way things are, believing that the bank is more powerful than our Father in heaven? that we can't see the cracks where the light of God's kingdom might shine in. Streetwise people are smarter in this regard than law-abiding citizens. They are on constant alert, looking for angles, surviving by their wits. I want you to be smart in the same way, but for what is right, and use every adversity to stimulate you to creative survival, to concentrate your attention on the bare essentials, so you'll live, really live, and not complacently just get by on good behavior. So let's be like the crooked manager in this regard, doing what is right through our creativity and wisdom, bet it all on God's good grace. I certainly wouldn't wager against it. Thank you.